Hudsonsmarket.com.
The Trade and Apprentice Education Division of the Henry Ford Community College is excited to present a new 10-credit-hour renewable energy certificate program. The content of the courses will be structured to inform the students of both present and future renewable energy concepts. This certificate program should interest students who are looking for an alternative to our current reliance on fossil fuels. To learn more about this program, please contact the Trade and Apprentice Education Division at 313-845-9609 or on the internet at www.hfcc.edu.
This is Pat Frisco from the Spirits Rejoice radio program with another thought to consider. The creative artist has always worked outside the box. The truly creative artist has a unique perspective, a unique voice. Their works of art go beyond what a painting is supposed to look like, or a jazz or classical piece is supposed to sound like. As a result, these artists are often overlooked, underpaid, or totally neglected. Just look across the radio dial. But these artists always have a home at WHFR. You can tune into Spirits Rejoice Tuesdays from 6 to 10 p.m. or many of our other fine radio programs here at 89.3 WHFR Dearborn.
Welcome to a special edition. Well, they're always special, of course, of Dearborn Heights News and Views. Whenever there's a third Tuesday in any month, and today is July 31st, 2012, watch out, yes, and tune in or go to the web and find out about Dearborn Heights issues. And today's show, the host, Ned Apigian, Dearborn Heights councilperson. So take it away, Ned, and tell us what we have for our listeners for the next hour.
Okay, thank you, Jay. Our guests today are, hopefully, three of the five candidates for the state representative seat in the new 11th district. The three represented today are vying to be the Democratic candidate in the November general election. Not represented here today is Ms. Kathleen Kopchak from Garden City, who is unopposed in her Republican primary contest and has decided not to participate. Represented here today are three of the four Democrat candidates in the August 7th Democratic primary. They are Bill Kalidis, Cody Bailey, both from Garden City, and David Kinesic of Dearborn Heights. Not participating today is Dorothy Webb Grady of Inkster. Now to the interviewing of the candidates for state representative from Michigan's 11th district.
Bill is on the line.
Yes, and the first one will be Bill Kalidas of Garden City.
Talk to him right now.
Bill, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Thank God. I can hear you, and I hope you can hear me.
Yes, very well. Thank you.
As we discussed what we're going to do, we're going to interview you with three divisions of questions, and then you're to talk yourself. I'm not going to interrupt you. The first question is, give us some personal autobiographical information about yourself. When you're through with that, which should take 3 or 4 minutes, and I'll ask you something about your professional background, your education, and anything in your background that's important for the voters to know what you bring to the council. And then after we do 3 or 4 minutes of that, we're going to ask you why you're running, what is it you bring to the process that the voters should vote for you as opposed to anybody else without discussing the other candidates. So it's up to you now. Tell us about yourself personally, Bill. So your personal background.
And announced, my name is Bill Kalidas, and I'm 59 years old, and I've been a lifelong resident of Garden City. I served some active time in the Air Force and got my discharge in the National Guard in about 1978. I was married with 2 children from my first marriage. When I was married the first time, my first wife actually lost her battle of cancer. She was about 44 years old. Passed away just before our 25th, or what would have been our 25th wedding anniversary. He had 2 children. My son, Eric, served in the armed forces in the Army, and he's got a Bachelor of Science degree in law enforcement from Ferris State. My daughter, she has an associate in accounting, and she's currently employed in a financial institution in Southfield. Both my kids still live in the area. I'm proud to say I've got 6 grandchildren.
You're a lucky man.
Well, I tell you what, they wore me out this weekend. I had a whole fishing and we had a good time.
You went camping, I know. I had to find you at the campground.
I'd love to do that.
Yes. Do you want to tell us something about your grandchildren, ages and what have you?
Well, they range in age from 4 up to 12. And I've got 4 granddaughters. Grandson.
Lord,
and, have mercy. Like I say, they keep me pretty busy. So,
well, I can imagine. I have 4 grandchildren myself, but they're in Boston. I see them rarely. Does that take care of your personal background?
No, I
got some more?
I did remarry in 2000 to my wife Diane. I have a stepdaughter who's now she attends Garden City High School, and I've been a member of the American Legion for 33 years. I started a group called the American Legion Riders, which used a bunch of veterans with their motorcycles. We formed an association, and they're there to, it's probably one of my proudest accomplishments, they're there to serve the veterans and the communities. It started in Garden City, and we now have 120,000 members across the country. I coach hockey for the Garden City Youth Athletic Association. I'm a member of St. Raphael's Church and a member of the Knights of Columbus.
Well, that's great. That's exactly the kind of information I want to get from everybody on their first question.
Okay.
Does that conclude your personal stuff?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. I appreciate that. I hope that gives our listeners some insight into people as human beings as well as just candidates. And the next question is, what can you tell us about yourself, your professional educational background, which makes you an ideal candidate?
Okay. Well, I graduated from Garden City High School in 1971. Went into the Air Force, and I was an honor graduate from an Air Force technical school. I furthered my education at Schoolcraft Community College and became a lifetime member of the Phi Theta Kappa International Honor Society, and also made the National Dean's List. I served on the City Council in Garden City for 7 years, and became Mayor Pro Tem in 1999, and then went on to get elected as mayor in 2001. Mm. Also in 38 years as a manufacturing manager, where I played a large role in quality management and plant management in various schools and workshops to learn how to streamline processes and reduce waste, which I think now plays an active role in how our automotive manufacturing survived. We had to learn how to streamline and reduce waste and produce a better quality product and keep the cost down. And we had to do that in order to survive. Okay? It was just a simple matter of survival. So those are a lot of things that I learned throughout my 38 years of manufacturing, and I think they can play an important role in the government today.
Are you retired now, or are you still working?
Actually, I call myself semi-retired.
Me too.
I still do a lot of volunteer work, especially with the veterans groups. It's been a part of my life for a long time, so I like to say I'm semi-retired. I still stay pretty busy.
So you're an active participating veteran in veterans groups.
Absolutely.
You didn't make it clear. What is it you studied in Schoolcraft College, and did you get an associate's degree in something?
No, I studied most of classes related to manufacturing.
I see.
And I probably got more credits than I needed for an associate's degree, but I scattered my classes only to what applied for what I needed to my work life.
Well, that's what you got to do. That's what schooling's all about, right?
Absolutely.
You could be studying Shakespeare and see what that'll get you for employment, I imagine. That brings us to the end of the second question, which is what kind of background do you have professionally and educationally? The third question is one where we may ask some questions.
Okay.
And in case those of us that came in late, we need to remind you that we're listening to Mr. Bill Kalidis, who is a candidate for the 11th District primary race for the Democratic candidates this August 7th. And now we're going to ask Bill, what is it the important, where we may jump in and ask some questions on this one.
Okay.
What is it you bring to the process that the voters need to know why we need you as the candidate as opposed to somebody else, but based on your background and experience? So,
sure.
And what do you like about what's going on? What don't you like about what's happening in the state legislature? What would you propose to do in the state legislature? And these are the same three questions we're going to ask all the candidates. So you can elaborate on that. We still have time for your segment. So go ahead. Tell us why you need to be the candidate.
Okay. Well, as a former mayor and former civic councilman, and also being a homeowner for the past 38 years, I do remember back when the Headley Amendment from Proposal A came around, and it was a shift in taxes to sales tax. That, you know, we're still all paying 6% sales tax.
That's for sure.
A lot of sales tax dollars were supposed to come through back to the cities through statutory revenue sharing. And I think in probably the past 10 years, statutory revenue sharing has been cut. The money was going back to the cities from. I'm not exactly sure on these figures, but I'm pretty close. About 10 years, they sent back $615 million back to the cities. Last year, I believe, it was only about $200 million back to the cities. And I think by doing that, they've been able to balance the state budget, but they've done it on the backs of the cities, okay? And to me, it's just simply they did this. They created a financial distress in the cities. And you know, like in the city of Inkster, they just laid off half their police force. And a lot of that was due to the cutbacks in revenue sharing. So what the state has done is they've created financial distress and then turned around and I think offered the cities things like an emergency financial manager to help solve the problem. So to me, it's just simply this. The state created the problem and then offered them a Band-Aid to fix it. And if I were to get elected, I would like to see accuracy of statutory revenue sharing dollars come back to cities, back to local control.
Well, we get it through. It comes from the federal government to the states, and the states portion it out. I don't think that's changed much. I think your original number, I was watching television the other day, and I seem to remember that number, $650 million. That didn't seem like a lot of money to me when you're talking about 50 states and God knows how many communities. And what it's reduced to, I'm not sure.
The statutory revenue sharing comes directly from the state. It doesn't come from the federal government.
The one that's it's divided into two sections.
Yeah, you get constitutional revenue sharing. It's
Right, exactly.
Yeah, they've cut back a lot on the statutory revenue sharing. And like I said, it's created a double hit for the cities because they've lost the statutory revenue sharing for the most part.
So, what do you think can be done about this? Ideas? You think you could change that?
Oh yeah, I think what happens is, like I say, I see a lot of waste in government. Being in the private sector in manufacturing, like I said, we had to learn a lot to survive, especially in the past 8 years. And there are ways to streamline processes that apply to government that I think can be used and restore some of that revenue sharing back to the cities and let these cities get back some of these police officers and firefighters that they just really need.
Well, you know, the governor's making requirements. You got to do this, you got to do that. You got to change your health plan into 80-20, which is really not serious when you think of most people. But I think here in Dearborn Heights, I think we're nowhere near 80-20, and when that would save us a lot of money. But it depends on your contractual arrangements with the people working for us. That's usually the sticking point. You got any other ideas about what you think needs to be changed?
Well, just to close up, you know, like I said, I have six grandkids. And, you know, really, the educational system is important. And I never want my grandkids, to have to come to me and say, you know, Grandpa, I have to leave the state to get a good job. I just never want to see that happen. So I think I got quite a stake here in the area. I want to say, you know, I like to keep my family close if I can, you know.
That's a bit unusual nowadays, but let me ask you this. Do you consider yourself a liberal, a moderate, a conservative?
I would say what are those? Conservative.
So you're a conservative Democrat.
Yep.
Okay. That tells us something. You got any other things you like to hang your hat on, like your pro-life not pro-life, and you would venture an opinion about that situation?
Well, I tell you what, I'm very, very much pro-life, and I remarried after my first wife died. A few years later, I remarried and gained a stepdaughter, and that taught me something in life because who I remarried to, she could have had an abortion, and I don't know if she planned it or not, or didn't talk about it, you know, but she kept that child on her own as a single mother.
And, okay.
Because of that decision, she's enjoying my life now. I have a new stepdaughter that she keeps me young.
There you go. That's what you need. It will give you an opportunity. Tell us anything you'd like about any other contact information you have, like how to reach you if you want to be reached. Telephone number,
sure.
Email.
I'll give you both my email and my phone number. My phone number is area code 734-421-7146.
Great.
And my email address is bkaledis@hotmail.com. That would be bkaledis@hotmail.com.
Right, that's B, not D, right?
Right.
B is in Bill. Yeah.
B is in Bill. Okay, that's for those of our listeners that would like to contact you. That's two ways to do it. I appreciate you taking the time. I know that we're doing this on the phone because you were not able to come to the studio. if you'd like to say something in conclusion, then we'll go on to a public service announcement to take a break from listening to me, and we'll go on to our next guest. Do you like to say something in conclusion, Bill?
I'm all set. I think I said what I got to say.
I think you did, too. You did a real good job.
Okay.
And we wish you luck in your endeavor. And
okay.
We're going to take a station. Okay?
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
HFCC's associate degree program in automotive technology includes detailed instruction related to the various systems found on today's vehicles. This program is designed to provide students with a thorough knowledge of the technical aspects of the automobile and to develop a certain level of manual skill in servicing, testing, and diagnosing. Classroom and laboratory classes provide students with the experience and understanding they'll need to qualify in numerous fields of employment associated with the automobile industry. For more information on HFCC's Associate Degree Program in Automotive Technology, contact Instructor Gary Hines at 313-845-6350. That's Instructor Gary Hines at 313-845-6350.
Think you have what it takes? We do. Henry Ford Community College. Visit us online at hfcc.edu.
8. I deliver your Sunday paper every week.
7. I'm the intern. We work on the same floor.
1 in 8 Americans is struggling with hunger.
6. Our kids walk to school together every day.
Including millions of children and seniors.
5. We chat in the elevator at work sometimes.
We all know people who aren't sure where their next meal is coming from.
4. I'm your cashier at the grocery store.
3. I work at the coffee shop around the corner.
2. I'm your babysitter. I care for your children.
1. I'm your grandmother's friend. We play bingo together.
Who's the 1 in 8 in your life that needs help? You can make a difference through Feeding America and its nationwide network of more than 200 food banks. Take action at feedingamerica.org/1in8. A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is a continuation now of the very special once every, about every 3 months or so, our WHFR Tuesday Forum, and on the fifth Tuesday of each month, and today is July 31st, 2012, in the studio, we're doing a live show on about candidates for the District 11, that's the Michigan House of Representatives, formerly, I think, called District 12, gerrymandered, and I know Ned Apigian, our host for this show and Dearborn City Council person, will introduce our second candidate for this office. Take it away, Ned.
Well, okay. Our guests today are, or were, of the 3 of the 5 candidates for state representative in the new 11th district, the 3 represented today are vying to be the Democratic candidate in the November general election. Not represented here today is Ms. Kathleen Kopchak of Garden City, who was unopposed in her Republican primary contest.
Represented. Even though she was invited.
Yep. Yeah, she invited. She was invited, and she thanked me profusely. Represented here today are the 3 of the 4 candidates in the August 7th Democratic primary. They, you just heard, Bill Kalidas of of Garden City. And now we're going to hear from David Kanizek of Dearborn Heights. Not participating today is Dorothy Webb Grady of Inkster. Now to interviewing the candidates for state representative for the Michigan's 11th district from the Democratic primary. I am your host, Ned Apigian, one of the 6 Dearborn Heights council persons, bringing you this program, The Heights News and Views, on the fifth Tuesday of every month. And now back to my guest. And our next guest is David Kinesic. David, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here, Ned. Of course, a pleasure to be back here on Henry Ford Community College's campus.
Okay. You heard our bill and how we're approaching the questions. Be one, two, three. We have about 20 minutes to discuss first your personal autobiographical information. Secondly, then we'll go into whatever professional education or background things you wish to discuss. And third, why you're running and what you hope to bring to the process. Your personal autobiographical information.
Sure. Well, you know, about myself, born and raised in Dearborn Heights. Father was a retired Dearborn Heights police officer over there. My mother's a lunch lady in the district. Went to St. Linus Middle School, graduated from Crestwood High School back in 2004. Went into the military after that. Completed my studies over at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. And right now I'm a substitute teacher here in Wayne County, and obviously enjoying the thrills of running for state representative in the new District 11.
So you're not married. You don't have any children.
I'm single, no children. If you want my height and weight, I guess I could give that to you as well. But
no.
I'm sorry. I've got to ask. He said that the thrills of running for representative. This is your first race for election.
That's correct.
So it's kind of all new to you. But what are some of those specific thrills? I'd like just briefly.
Well, you know, in terms of elections, prior to this, I did have the privilege of serving as president of the student body over at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. But obviously, the election is on a much different scale. And the type of campaigning you have to do is quite different. You know, we're in here in studio. We don't have the opportunity to go on the radio when you're campaigning for student body president. But, you know, we're going door to door. We're making sure that we're at a multitude of community events and meetings, making sure that we're getting that direct voter contact. In my opinion, that's the only way to do it. You can't sit there. You can't run a campaign over Facebook. You can't run a campaign over the phone. You need to be meeting with voters face-to-face, and we've been keeping up with that. So I've dropped 20 pounds. I've gotten a nice tan, and I've got no complaints, I tell you what.
Okay.
I never lost 20 pounds.
Come walk with us, Ned. We'll get you done.
Yeah. That door-to-door in the Michigan summer will definitely do it. So back to any other biographical information about yourself. I mean, we certainly want to know about what you've studied at University of Michigan, Dearborn, and what your special interests are, you know, some people have significant hobbies too that might relate to
that's a good one.
Their elections. I don't know, but just please continue.
Well, you know, in regards to my education and background, like I said, I originally started at Michigan State University when I graduated from Crestwood High School, and going into my sophomore year, tuition's on the rise, rooming and board's on the rise, and before you know it, we realized that sophomore year at Michigan State just wasn't going to happen. So came back here to U of M Dearborn, started to study political science.
This is before you went in the Marines?
This is before I went in the Marines, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and believe it or not, you know, like I mentioned earlier.
I wanted to get your chronology straight.
Yeah, absolutely. And so 2006, I was here right next door at U of M Dearborn, and I was a political science major, and, you know, at the time, the Iraq War was hot and heavy, and it seemed to be all we were talking about in class, and little by little, more and more of my friends I graduated high school with were walking into the recruiting office and signing up and going off to do their part. And after being exposed to it so much and seeing other people step up to do their part.
So you left U of M as a
sophomore.
So you did 1 year at Michigan State. Mm-hmm. You did 1 year at U of M Dearborn.
Correct.
Did you finish the 1 year?
Yeah.
Okay. Then you decided to join the Marines.
That's correct. Yep. So in May 2006, I walked in the recruiting office and signed up for 6 years of service. And 11 days later, I was on the Yellow Footprints at Parris Island, South Carolina.
The what footprint?
The Yellow Footprints. When you go to boot camp down in South Carolina, every recruit lines up on this set of yellow footprints painted on the ground.
I don't remember.
Is that because they can't follow signs? Some of them can't read yet? I mean, you obviously could read, but I never understood that. I've seen it for kids' exhibits, mm-hmm. you know, in museums. Kiddies follow the footprints.
I think it's more trying to get everybody used to the concept of being a team, lining up and organizing as a platoon, and realizing that from here on out, look to your left, look to your right. These are your brothers from here on out, and you better get used to it.
I don't remember that.
That was, that was anyway, a different period, wasn't it, Ned?
6 years. It was 50 years ago, but six. So you signed up for 6 years. You obviously didn't do 6 years.
Yeah, I did. 2006. I just got out in May 23rd of this
is,
year.
Folks, this is radio, not TV. And Ned is commenting on the fact that David seems very youthful and good for you. He's probably losing at 20 pounds, too. It didn't hurt. I just lost 20 pounds since January. So, Ned, I'll tell you afterwards how to do that. So
that heart operation didn't do it. Oh, my God.
By the way, folks, the strange voice here, I am Jay Koronek. I host the Friday WHFR Journal, and I often help Ned. But sometimes, because I'm so humble, I don't introduce myself. But you might say, who is that guy asking the silly? Okay.
He's the boss.
Back to you, Ned.
Anyway. So you came out of the Marines where? This is 2012. What month was that?
May.
May.
Yep.
So you're not back in U of M finishing the program.
When I came off my second tour in Iraq in 2012, I dropped into the reserves. And then while I was in the reserves, I went back to the University of Michigan Dearborn to complete my studies.
Okay. So you were not active duty 6 years. You
correct.
Were what, 2 years or 3 years?
3 years.
3 years.
Correct.
Okay, so during the 3 years, you returned in 2009. So did you finish this program at U of M Dearborn?
Absolutely, yeah. Okay. Walked across the stage back in April.
Okay. Oh, so you finished it this year?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, now I know.
I should have given you a chronology before I came here.
No, that's the whole point of this, for you to divulge it. If it doesn't come out clearly, then I'm going to probe. So I'll know.
Well, I have to ask, and I know you had previous interest in political science, and of course, after going through military service, you realize how the U.S. military is dependent on political decisions. I mean, certainly you have your commanders that try to make tactical decisions, but politics really affects budget, employment, I mean, you know, where you're sent in the world. You just have to follow orders, of course, but politics, I remember the definition in my days of political science. They used a book by Harold Laswell, which was entitled Politics, the Science of Who Gets What, Why, Where, When, and How. And and certainly that's where the power is. That's where new decisions or new directions can come from. So we're excited to have you in the studio, David Kinesick, one of the candidates for Democratic primary, Dearborn Heights mostly, or I guess it extends into Garden City.
Yeah. We've actually got five different cities in the new district.
Yeah, why don't you explain that? I'm not sure we made it clear at the outset. How many?
Wait a minute. We're at the midpoint.
Yes,
I want
tell
to
us.
Do a station ID, and you can do it after I do.
You got it.
The station ID.
Thank you, Ned. He's following the rules, folks.
We got to do the rules. You know. Anyway, I wanted to say that you are listening to News Heights News and Views, and we're part of this station's weekly talk show format on Tuesdays from 1 to 2, and we're right here on WHFR making waves on 89.3 FM from the student radio station broadcasting from the Henry Ford Community College located in Dearborn, Michigan. So now we know at the midpoint what you're listening to, and I like to interrupt every once in a while to let you know you are presently listening to David Kinesick, who is one of the four candidates in the Democratic primary, which will take place this August 7th. Unfortunately, we're not able to hear all of them. Many have been invited. Two have decided that they don't need to show up, or they can't, or I'm not sure what the reason is, but we have invited them. It's not convenient for everybody. Some people work. And
well, we wanted to do it live because the excitement of live and the excitement of maybe making a mistake, you know, and
we do
not being able to edit it out. So, okay. And this is next Tuesday, folks. If you're listening either to our podcast from WHFR sometime after July 31st or today,
that was the next thing. I was
1 week away, right, Ned?
Right. Yeah. It's only a week away, and I wanted to be able to let you know you can re-listen to these archive programs on the internet on your computer by selecting WHFR.FM to get to our site. Select the talk show button and select today's date, July 31st, 2012, and you'll be able to not only re-listen to today's program, But any other one, which happens to fall on the fifth Tuesday of the month. So
right, we call them Tuesday Forum. Actually, three categories under there. This is Tuesday, okay? And so Tuesday Forum, and then select the date, and you'll be able to listen to this anytime. Download it and go out jogging. That's right. What an idea.
Okay. And
now back to our guest. David was going to tell us about the cities that are represented in the... Go ahead, David.
Yeah, it's the brand new 11th District. We have all of Inkster, all of Garden City, North Dearborn Heights, 2 square miles of Westland, and 1 square mile of Livonia. So like Jay was saying, absolutely gerrymandered this last year. And it's exciting, but again, it's also a challenge. You've got 5 different mayors, 5 different city councils, school boards, more than 5 school boards, actually, to deal with. But at the same time, you get a very diverse perspective, and I think it's going to make us... even more effective up in the legislature.
It makes getting elected almost impossible and very expensive. It's a lot of trouble.
I did hear, Ned, today, I heard someone make that comment that even though the gerrymandering does take away sort of your familiar local, like, city base, if you grew up in a city, they might know you more and you have more name recognition there, that now people from such diverse districts, like even John Dingell's new district, it goes from, like, Ann Arbor and swoops down river, is that... In a way, you can't play favorites. You can't do something that's only good for, let's say, Garden City, although our general manager, Susan McGraw, would like you to favor Garden City. Just a word there, because that's her favorite city. That's where she grew up. But really, you have to look at, on the big picture bills, maybe there's something specifically you can do for one area. But in general, it sort of forces you, in fact, to look at all the people that live in these areas. And so you're not going to favor rural over urban or rich over poor. You have to look at all these different kinds of people. I hadn't thought of that. You know, that is a slight positive, but it certainly makes campaigning difficult in terms of driving from, like, one corner of the district to the other. I mean, at the farthest point, the 11th district must be, what, 25, 30 miles from corner to corner?
Corner to corner, I couldn't tell you. I know that as far as east to west, we've go all the way from Evergreen to...
Here in Dearborn.
All the way out past Vinoy. So we've got a couple miles out that way. But, you know, speaking to the challenges...
How about north and south?
North and south, I've got... the south goes all the way down to Annapolis at the south of Inkster. And
okay, right.
North is Plymouth Road at the top of that square mile of Livonia we have.
Okay. So that's... Anyway, that's... The interesting thing about this, the average person doesn't know who in the world their state representative is and couldn't
that's
tell
true.
You what district they're in. And it goes all the way through the whole system of state senators. The federal office holders have it easy. There's 2 senators for the whole state. But beyond that, even congressional districts, I defy anybody to tell me where Conyers district begins and Dingell's district ends, right here on Fort Road.
Well, my rep is Conyers, and somewhere, because I live in East Dearborn, but
somewhere
west of me, all of a sudden it becomes Dingell. So I don't know either. I have to admit, I think I'm trying to keep up. But.
And the real problem with this is a political problem. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, I don't care who you are. I think these congressional districts have to be done by population within 5%. They
correct.
Change so often. Why do you have to make it perfectly? What is it? I forget what it was. Almost 500,000 people per district it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is, excuse me, you should follow county lines, baseline 8 miles. What's the difference if you're a little bit off? The population changes. Excuse me. Now, let's get back to the aspect of I think we've covered your professional and back. What'd you do in the Marine Corps? You got a job for 3 years.
I came out of the Marine Corps. I had the pleasure of serving both tours in the Scout Sniper Platoon over in Iraq and came back. And, you know, that's one of the reasons I came back to college. You know, you really can't take many skills that you learn in a sniper platoon and translate them into anything out here in the real world. And so it was incumbent upon me to head back to the university, get myself a degree, and try and become a productive member of society back here home.
Okay, now we're going to get into a political question. Why are you running? What do you bring to the process? What would you like to change? What do you see you don't like? Yeah, we got a lot of time.
Sure.
Don't worry.
Sure, sure, sure. Well,
we got a lot of time. Okay. So what do you bring to the process that some other, not the candidate, some any other human being might not bring?
Well, first I'll talk about, you know, the policy issues and whatnot that we're trying to focus on this year. And from day one, the theme that we've taken with the campaign is restoring Michigan's promise. And that's to our students, to our senior citizens, our middle class, our veterans, and of course, bringing jobs back here to the state of Michigan. And the first thing I'll say about jobs, one of the things that I want to do if elected to the Michigan legislature is immediately introduce a package of bills that directly ties the incentives that we currently have at the state level to actual job creation. I think these last couple of years we've seen, you know, we've got an incentive for this, an incentive for that. Let's throw it out there. Let's see if something good happens. And all you have to do is look at Allen Park and look at the film industry tax credit they created and see that when you know, throw these out there with a hope and a prayer that it's going to create jobs here in the state, and then it goes bust, it brought the whole city of Allen Park down with it. So first and foremost, I want to make sure that we're tying the incentives, the taxpayer dollars, directly to demonstrated job creation. I think that's the best way for us to get our best return on our investment here as citizens.
I have to break in here, Jay Kornick, again, and just support that. For years, when that tax incentive for film and specifically the Allen Park studio situation came up, those of us, and I've taught film history and the media business for 40 years here, everybody in the film business, of course, we liked the investment idea, but we knew that one in particular was wrong. It wasn't going to work out. Who are these studio guys? Never heard of them before. Oh, they had backers. Sure, prove it. It was just if they would have actually talked to anybody who was actually in the film business in Michigan, or even, pardon the expression, college professors who had background in this, they would know that that was the wrong deal. Now, maybe there is such a thing as a right deal, but as you said, each one of these needs to be explored, I think, beyond the political field and even the banking field, and actually talk to some people who are really in these industries and who really know them in a sort of unbiased or outside way. So couldn't agree with you and others more on that. By the way, I've heard, Dave, how do you counter? I've heard some Republicans saying exactly the same thing in the state of Michigan, that there's all this investment and it hasn't really had great results direct, although I think even, you know, some results are better than none. But, I actually hear you might get some Republican support for that in the legislature, is to actually, although they probably don't want any investment at all from the state, but you might get some support on that. I just know that the Allen Park situation was a disaster, and we all knew it before it happened from those of us that were impartially involved with the film industry.
Anyway, big issues, specific things that you can identify.
I'll continue, too, on the end that I was talking about, because if you're not talking about jobs, I mean, you're missing the mark here right now. And, we've had a lot of conversation in the last 2 years about how Michigan can better its business climate so that we can attract jobs. And I think that's a great thing. We've seen a little bit of benefit from that. But what I don't hear, and what concerns me as, like Jay pointed out, as a 25-year-old, who wants to make sure that my friends and other graduates from university are stepping out and being able to jump right into the workforce, is we haven't had any conversation about what the next generation of businesses look like here in the state of Michigan. Even though we know what they look like, they're smaller, they're entrepreneurial in nature, and they require a highly skilled workforce, highly educated workforce. And so I strongly believe that if we can retool our educational system to meet the needs and the demand that we not only have right now, but also that we can foresee into the future, we should see an increase in not just startups, but the expansion of current businesses, and as well as attraction of businesses from other parts of the country. And then, finally, on the jobs issue, I believe that the consumers drive the economy. It's the consumer who purchases the product that requires the business to increase production and hire more workers. So anything that we can do to put money back in the pockets of Michigan residents, I'm talking about reinstating the earned income tax credit, repealing the senior tax on pensions, this is exactly what we need to be doing right now. And you're talking about big issues. I just mentioned seniors. I'll roll right into that. I support 100% a full repeal of the senior tax on pensions. It was done at a time where people were saying that we've got this hole in the budget we need to fill, and what a shame that, you know, when we've got these holes in the budget, we feel like we have to balance it on the backs of a population that's one of the most vulnerable in our state. So me personally, I'd like to see the full repeal of the pension tax. The income that it brings in doesn't nearly necessitate the cause of doing so. Next I'll roll into education. And again, for me, this is something near and dear to my heart. I was in the School of Education over at U of M Dearborn when I finished up. And first and foremost, you know, we've got three tiers of education here: early childhood, K-12, higher ed. And I think that early childhood education is being extremely ignored, to the detriment of the state as a whole. And the statistic I like to use for this is that every $1 that we spend on early childhood education, it offsets $17 of future government spending, 11 of which would have gone into the correction system, which we already know is just a huge drain on Michigan's budget right now. So it comes down to really a fundamental philosophy, not of just how we want to govern, but how we want to spend our money as well. Do we want to invest in kids and give them the tools to be successful from day one in their educational careers, or do we want to wait and lock them up when they're older because they've been ill-prepared all along? At the K-12 level, I'd like to see a renewed focus on attracting and retaining the best and brightest teachers. I think we can do that through stipend programs, loan forgiveness programs for those individuals who graduate at the top of their collegiate classes and then enter into the classroom to educate our next generation of professionals. And once they're there, make continuing education for teachers meaningful and purposeful, and accessible. And then finally, I was so happy to see the AFT convention in town, downtown Detroit this last week, talking about curriculum, this one-size-fits-all curriculum, teach to the test. We know this does not work. This is a 21st century economy. We need to make sure that we've got a 21st century education for our kids that includes the arts, that includes music and foreign languages. And just real quick, while I mentioned the arts there, I'd like to plug, too, everybody to support the millage to support the Detroit Institute of Arts coming up next week as well. I think that's integral for our Metro Detroit community. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, you know, Ned, me and you, we're both veterans. We both got the Marine Corps tie there. Michigan ranks 53rd right now in terms of how we treat our veterans. 53rd. Now, if you've took your civics class, you remember we got 50 states here in the United States. That means that we rank below Guam, Puerto Rico, and Washington, D.C., in terms of how we treat our veterans. And flat out, that's wrong. These individuals, these men and women, have stepped up and made extreme sacrifices for our country and for our state. And to, you know, ignore that sacrifice or cast it aside, it's wrong. Go ahead, Jay.
Yeah, if I can just quick follow-up, what are the criteria for how you treat veterans? Is it health care benefits?
Or? Benefits, access to care,
okay.
Spending, per capita spending. And you know, there's talks right now about shutting down this veteran's home, that veteran's home. We got 400 veterans in these homes. You know, if you shut them down, if you kill the funding, where are they going to go? Where are they going to receive the care? And what a slap in the face to these men and women who really laid it all on the line for our state and our country. And so the first thing I want to talk about is dedicated funding formulas for our current veterans and for our current military here, the Michigan National Guard. You know, we've got the Michigan Department of Military and Veterans Affairs right now. So that pits our veterans and our active duty personnel against each other each and every year when they create the budget. Where's the money going to go? And I'd have to say, a majority of the time, the active duty guys went out, which, you know, when I'm on active duty, I think that's a great thing. You know, we're getting the resources we need. But for the veterans who are sitting there hoping that they can have their benefits packages come in, you know, they're out of luck. And so I'd like to have dedicated funding formulas that ensure our active duty and veteran personnel receive the funding that they need to be successful, as well as for those returning veterans that are coming back from the Middle East or coming off of active duty, pair them up with transition coaches so they have access to the educational benefits, the job benefits, healthcare, and what have you, that they need to be successful when they come back home here in the United States.
Well, I guess the Veterans Department's got a lot to do in the federal government. I don't know how much the state's got to do with it. But anyway, the thing we have, and we thank you for coming. I'm sure Jay and I will have a discussion on the last 10 minutes about some of the points you brought up about term limits, public education. You know this Michigan legislation. They're not interested in public education. That's where the future. All of us that, you know, when my father didn't own a house, me and my three sisters went to school, and my father didn't pay taxes. Anyway, let's get.
Yeah, I just want to say that you mentioned that we're 53rd in supporting veterans out of all the states and territories of the U.S. I think Michigan still ranks in terms of per capita funding for higher education, which is pretty essential these days. You mentioned like a highly skilled workforce. We're like 45th or 47th. Out of 50. So we've had this terrible record for 30 years of not supporting higher ed. And, of course, it's a question of is the money being well spent and so on. But other states, 45 other states, give more money per capita to higher education. That's got to make a difference, okay, in terms of quality and the number of people who are getting education, not to mention the problem of who can afford it anymore.
Anyway, you know? I'm shocked by that. Yeah. That's the case. Well, anyway,
look at last
why don't
year.
You yeah. tell us the information we need as to how to contact you.
Absolutely.
Your contact information, how to reach you.
Phone number is...
go ahead.
Phone number is 313-451-4586. I'll say it again, 313-451-4586. And the website's up and running, been up there since February now. It's votekinesic.com, VOTEKNEZEK.com. And we love to stay constituent focused over there at the campaign. So give us a call or shoot us a message, and we'd be glad to get back with you.
And anybody would like to help you, they're welcome to call you or send you money.
Please.
Or whatever they want, just like anybody else, right?
We'd love to have the support. You know, like we said, a week away, we'd love to have the support.
We really thank you for coming. We're sorry that Mr. Cody Bailey, for some reason, could not attend. And... if he happens to walk in the last 10 minutes, I'd be happy to talk to him. But I'm sure Jay and I are going to discuss some
of
these.
We're just going to do a quick public service announcement, and Ned and I will be back to wrap up the show.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dave.
You can stay.
Yeah, sure. Farmers and Artisans Market returns to bring in support of local farmers and entrepreneurs right to the heart of Dearborn. Beginning May the 25th, over 30 Michigan vendors will be selling some of the finest seasonal products, from produce goods and flowers to garden art and woodworkings. This will also mark additional times for the market. Tuesday evenings, June 19th, July 17th, and August the 21st. The Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market will be open every Friday starting May the 25th from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. and is located on West Michigan Avenue between Mason and Howard. For more information about the market, including special Tuesday hours, check out DearbornFarmersArtisansMarket.com.
The Trade and Apprentice Education Division of the Henry Ford Community College is excited to present a new 10-credit hour renewable energy certificate program. The content of the courses will be structured to inform the students of both present and future renewable energy concepts. This certificate program should interest students who are looking for an alternative to our current reliance on fossil fuels. To learn more about this program, please contact the Trade and Apprentice Education Division at 313-845-9609 or on the internet at www.hfcc.edu.
This is Pat Frisco from the Spirits Rejoice radio program with another thought to consider. The creative artist has always worked outside the box. The truly creative artist has a unique perspective a unique voice. Their works of art go beyond what a painting is supposed to look like, or a jazz or classical piece is supposed to sound like. As a result, these artists are often overlooked, underpaid, or totally neglected. Just look across the radio dial. But these artists always have a home at WHFR. You can tune into Spirits Rejoice Tuesdays from 6 to 10 p.m. or many of our other fine radio programs here at 89.3 WHFR Dearborn.
And we're going to conclude now our special Tuesday Forum, Dearborn Heights News and Views, the third Tuesday of every month that has one, the fifth Tuesday of every month that has one. Today is July 13th, 31st. A little dyslexia there. My name is Jay Koronek, and your host, Ned Epigian, is here in the studio. And so we've had two candidates for the primary are going to be on the ballot next Tuesday, Ned. Yep, two out of five.
Not bad, I guess.
No, not bad. We did invite all of them, and the Republican candidate was not able, after confirming, to make it in today for our live show. And two of the Democratic candidates, one said that they just could not make it. And Cody Bailey, as you mentioned before our break here, said he could make it, and he has not arrived, so he's not in the show today.
Hopefully he's not involved in
hopefully nothing bad happened,
like
of course.
That.
But we do encourage everyone to go and vote in the primary, as one of the candidates said. They're personally in support of the and they believe that the Detroit Institute of Arts funding costs across the Tri-County should be approved. It is on the ballot. We're not taking sides here. There's also a millage proposal to continue funding for 10 years of the Wayne County jail system. That's a renewal, not a new tax, folks. But these are important things to vote on.
Well,
if you
don't keep
strongly.
Them in jail, they're going to be wandering around the street.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure that's a threat, but what other choice do you have right now? You know,
it's, exactly.
Yeah. Ned, I wanted to ask you about Dearborn Heights City Council. First of all, how are budget matters going? Have you already approved the budget for 2012-2013?
Yeah.
Did it start July 1st?
July 1st. You're right that we did that.
Okay. Do you think, as last year, there'll have to be a correction made or other cutbacks later?
I don't think so, because now we have the new tax, the Headley override money is coming to us. When is tax time? July 15th? When is it?
Well, there's a summer and a winter taxes.
Summer,
I don't know when those are going to be due. I have a big chunk payment that I pay.
I'm looking at
the so-called summer taxes. It's somewhere in September, and that I could postpone it in multiple payments.
So I asked that question myself, and the answer was when the summer tax. Now, unfortunately, I don't think the money's due until August 15th.
Check with your city clerk's office, folks, in your various cities. Maybe it differs.
Yeah, it could differ. I know I talked about it with my wife, and I said, are you going to pay this?
Some people, of course, just pay that automatically out of their house payments. Their banks take care of that by getting escrow money together.
Right. Mine is not like that. My wife likes to pay it when it's due.
And I do, too. Dearborn just set up an automatic deduction directly from my savings account, which is very convenient for me, and they don't charge any extra. If I would have actually used a charge to pay it, they would have cost a service fee. So I think it's kind of cool for the first year Dearborn residents, if they have like a savings account that will have enough money in it, they can have it taken out.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the important thing is for this year, according to our budget plans, we're supposed to have not only a deficit but a surplus this year. And God willing, like they say, everything's going to turn out great. And some of the rumors you hear about us joining departments are just, those are in discussion. None of them have ever come to the council.
That's with other cities?
With other cities.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And one lady came to our last meeting and said, I didn't pass the Headley override so that you could decide to be the fire department for Garden City. And the mayor assured her, anything that we end up doing, and we haven't decided anything, it's going to be advantageous to both of us. We're going to save money and have better service by involving somebody else into our system. So the summer tax is going to help. Things will change. Now, the only thing I'd like to say, if we got 2 minutes before my closing, is the problem is with education is, and this is my only view, is we have to change our educational system to look more like what they do in Europe, and that is train people to do jobs, and that's what we're not doing here. I went to a technical vocational high school in New York, and let me tell you, at graduation time, it was like college graduation where companies were coming to entice the graduates to go to work for them. My daughter was a foreign exchange student in Germany, and she had German sisters that were trained as travel agents. They spoke several languages. And I had a friend that came from France, and he was a plumber. And I asked him, how is it you became a plumber? He says, well, when we were in school, you had to make a choice. You were going to be a bricklayer, you were going to be a plumber, and if you qualified for the academic programs or the science programs, you moved ahead. If you didn't, they didn't waste time with you. And that's the secret. And they've been doing that in Germany for 100 years, since Bismarck, and we haven't learned anything about education as far as I'm concerned. Well, it's time for me to say goodbye until the next Heights News and Views. And we're going to play our closing remarks.
You have been listening to the Heights News and Views, a live talk show program part of the WHFR Tuesday Forum series of talk show programs from 1 to 2 p.m. The Heights News and Views is a program presented on the fifth Tuesday of any month. The program is devoted to interviews with prominent individuals on issues important to the residents of Dearborn Heights. You have been listening to WHFR 89.3 FM Dearborn, making waves from the campus of Henry Ford Community College, located in Dearborn, Michigan. You can re-listen to this and all of our other archived forum programs on the internet by going to our website at whfr.fm and select the Tuesday date for the program that you wish to rehear by selecting the desired date. Thank you very much for listening to the Heights News and Views today.
You're listening to the station that's making waves, WHFR Dearborn.
Breathe deeply as we enjoy this Garden of Roses by Scarlatti. Thank you.